Are you of a student originally from Barrow and have also resided at Point Hope previously? I have heard that the law discriminates racially. This is not true, for non-native individuals and families have hunted for subsistence use under this law. Another point is that the store-bought foods and utilities are expensive in the rural communities. Time and again, we have heard people state that the food prices in Fairbanks and Anchorage are expensive. How ironic to hear this by rural residents of Alaska, where food prices are twice or three times as much in comparison to these two cities. Some hold true, the same holds true for heating, where the land is being extracted for oil. Furthermore, it is true that the majority of the Native people are subsistence hunters. With the passage of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, we were not given 40 million acres. We gave up 9/10 of our land, provided that subsistence use is given a priority. We all know what happened to the buffalo and the muskox. We must not make that same mistake, because a repeal would lead to depletion of animals due to poor management. Once again, sport hunters will arrive into the cities with their airplanes, causing the animals to go farther away from the villages. What chance does a rural resident have when animals cannot be reached except through airplanes? We do not own planes to take us to the animals. Once again, we will be the ones who ultimately suffer the hardships. In this day and age, it would seem that United States would learn from the past mistakes where near extinction of animals and people were involved by sports hunting. Lastly, I would like to stress that hunting and fishing are our livelihood, nutrition, and culture. I feel that it's essential that foods obtained from the land are our means of survival. They provide the necessary nutrients that are needed by the body, as well as the spiritual values that are closely linked to the animals. Therefore, we cannot permit monetary values to override the spiritual values, nor allow Alaska's animals to be exhausted to depletion. I wish that the subsistence law not be repealed.
Thank you very much, Ms. Stackhouse. Kevin Heron, to be followed by Sharon Sunnyboy.
Well, I really had no intention of coming down here today until I saw some of the political posturing that was going on the television. And it really concerned me as an individual, a lot of the split and that has gone on. I'm an urban Alaskan. I enjoy living in Fairbanks. I enjoy my lifestyle here. I like to get out now and then. I like to fish now and then. But I have no intention of moving out to the bush. One of the biggest issues that's come up has been the question of equality. And it's been mentioned that in the Alaska State Constitution that we are guaranteed equal rights and opportunities. But our rights and opportunities are actually, in fact, quite different. I myself have quite a bit different opportunities living here in Fairbanks than I would if I lived in rural Alaska, and I think that has to be recognized. Many of us in the cities, we get a lot of benefits too, such as different kinds of subsidies. I think half of Fairbanks and Anchorage are on the dole in one way or another, either through direct government jobs or contracts that are let by the government. The other thing is that the U.S. Constitution, of course, guarantees equality, but we wouldn't think of saying that the equal protection of the law means that we have to give all our resources to the lower 48. I think most Alaskans would not agree with that. In fact, a lot of the scarcity that is being brought on today is brought on by many urban policies, policies of development and growth to increase our material wealth in the cities. Now, I really feel that those who need the resources should be given the preference. I do have some concerns, though, that I really think that the committee ought to look at. One is that perhaps some areas of the state ought to be deleted from a definition of subsistence, because when I look at, say, the Denali Highway area and look at the Nelchina herd range, I really have a hard time saying whether people in that area are really subsistence-oriented. A lot of them may depend somewhat more on the caribou and other resources of the area, but is it really subsistence? I think the definition of subsistence really comes more into play in other areas. Another thing is I really think preference should be given to Alaska residents over outside residents, and even over local use over, say, trophy hunting. I think that if there is a scarcity, that really the local residents ought to be given first choice. Local control is really important. I think it's something that Alaskans really value. Waste is another concern, and I think there's waste in rural Alaska too. I think there's waste in urban Alaskan hunters as well. I think there's waste in both segments, and I think we've got to root out that waste. My biggest concern, however, is how to build an understanding between rural and urban Alaskan hunters, because we really don't need this split. It's no good. I think we need to involve urban hunters, because it's another good thing. I think by polarizing things and by giving the impression that urban hunters are going to be excluded, we're losing out something too, because if urban hunters have a stake in rural Alaska, they're going to be more likely to protect the habitat and have an interest in the management. So I don't feel that subsistence should be repealed, but I do believe that modifications are in order to eliminate the waste and to make sure that urban hunters aren't going to be unfairly excluded in cases where maybe scarcity doesn't exist. And I do believe that we in urban Alaska have to realize the root causes of a lot of this scarcity. And a lot of that is our own policies here right in Fairbanks. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Mr. Herron. Sharon Sunnyboy could be followed by Mike Jacobson.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
May I ask a question?
Certainly.
Yeah. Okay. Now, I'd like to ask this young man, what do you mean by urban waste? Now, I'm a native Alaskan, and I know through hunting and stuff like that, we do not waste. Now, I'd like to him to clarify that statement, waste.
Sir, I think if you take the statute on waste, it's clear in there what is considered to be waste legally. What you and I consider waste, however, can be drastically different than what he or other people may consider that. If you want to know what his definition of waste is, I would suggest that you talk with him either out in the hall or after the meeting. Thank you. Ms. Sunnyboy?
Thank you. My name is Sharon Sunnyboy. I was born in Fairbanks, raised in Nenana, and have lived in Alaska all my life. My main concern with repeal of the subsistence law is that what management tool will we have to protect our resources if this law is repealed? If it's repealed, does that mean that the sports hunters can go in and get food when it is scarce? Also, it's been brought up by many people that the urban people have other resources. They have opportunities for jobs here in Fairbanks. The prices of food are much less here than they are in Barrow, even in Alakaka, Tanana, or places that are where food and materials have to be flown in. And I just like to say that I think a repeal in the law would be to our disadvantage as Alaskans, not as Native Alaskans, but as Alaskan residents. If you would look at the law, the only thing it says is if there's a scarcity in our natural resources, the priority should go to the people who depend on it, who do not have monetary the food is not available to them as it is in the urban area. I think that would cover my testimony. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Sunnyboy. Mike Jacobson, to be followed by Linda Dutton.
Thank you. My name is Mike Jacobson, and I'm going to make this short. I've spent a lot of time living in rural Alaska. People in rural Alaska do not have the alternatives. They don't have the choices that urban people have. For one thing, they don't have Safeways or market baskets. I am in favor of retaining this subsistence law as it is.
Thank you very much, Mr. Jacobson. Linda Dutton, or Dunton, to be followed by Dick Burley.
Good morning. I'm Linda Denton from Allakaket. I was born and raised in Allakaket and decided to live over here in Fairbanks, more or less to learn more about the culture over here and see if I could help my people in Allakaket in any way. For one thing, I guess this is kind of what I've been waiting for, to be able in some way to speak up, because I'm here, they're there, and nobody, you know, no committee will go to Allakaket, you know. I mean, they just don't do it. So I would like to express some of my concerns here. And one is that I wouldn't want to see the subsistence law repealed, because who's going to support these people out there? They're not going to go out there and bring them food for nothing, you know, and that's what they live on, is that's their life, is their food. And nobody's going to bring them food to support their whole life. And when they do that, they do it in food stamps, and everybody look down at the people. And again, they're putting us in positions where we have to be looked down upon. And that's something I don't like. And I don't know, I hear all about this waste and stuff, and it's not... The people out there are not wasting any food. My family have always lived off the land, and they still do, and they've never wasted anything. And I've seen a lot of people come into our area hunting and wasting, and you know, they come in and they wreck a lot of our resources. And you know, I wish that they would just leave it for subsistence use instead of having a lot of sports hunters and stuff out there. And like my grandpa Edwin Simon says, it is a clock working, and we don't just go out there for one day and hunt and come home. It's where they live, and they don't just live in one area. They live, they move from one camp to another. We have a winter camp, a spring camp, a fish camp, and you know, we just move from one, at every part of the season, we move from one place. For fish, we move to one, and for trapping, we move to another. But we've always lived like that, and I'd just like to see, you know, see that lifestyle stay alive. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Dick Burley, to be followed by Sigrid Kara.
Mr. Chairman, before I begin my testimony, I'd like to ask one question. I know of at least three people that have been passed over that have signed the list before me, and I'm wondering why there was no announcement given as to anybody being passed over.
I'm sorry, it's not my intent to cut off anyone who has not spoken. It is my intent to get people who have not spoken before this committee, and so far I have three people who have given testimony to the committee. I think those people I pass over know who they are, and each of them has come up so far. And it's my intent to get as much testimony from people who have not yet given testimony to the committee. And if we do have time in the end, I will call on them.
It just seems a little unfair that people have taken time to come down here and sign up and then they're passed over. I'm testifying on behalf of the Interior Wildlife Association, and my testimony is as follows. The Alaska Constitution specifically states that whenever occurring in their natural state, fish, wildlife, and waters are reserved to the people for common use. This provision, plus the 14th Amendment to the United States Constitution, which guarantees equal protection of the laws, inhibits the ability of the state to pass legislation which is wholly and entirely in favor of a particular population. Sidney Huntington is of Native descent and currently serves on the State Game Board. He has long been outspoken against state or federal subsistence legislation. He is a 60-year resident of the bush and a very respected Alaskan. Many times, based on his vast knowledge of the resources, he has testified in opposition to subsistence legislation. To quote, "I feel it is unconstitutional to use the word subsistence to define the way of life of one person over another. If our government says we do just that, it seems that we are being forced to discriminate against each other, both here in Alaska and other citizens who make up the U.S., a very undesirable condition. Remember, overpractice of subsistence in some areas, when made into law, eliminates certain species in that area, because it will be overexercised and will mean ruination to most other resources and habitats as well. Who is eligible for subsistence? I am sure there is no way anyone could define it, so it will be honest and fair to everyone in an area or region. If there were no one getting..." to determine who is eligible for subsistence. There are many more circumstances to confront us. Each one is just as discriminative as any other you might want to bring up. I see no fair way or means to really honestly define subsistence for one citizen over another. It is a task like it would be to tell one of your children that he should get more than the other. One of the biggest factors against game resources in most areas is the people themselves. Overhunting, hunting out of season, killing unnecessarily at times, and many more factors boil down to destruction of our resources. With all the high-powered mechanized equipment that is readily available, the resources have no chance." End of quote. It has long been the policy of the Game and Fish Boards to favor local residents when they set seasons and bag limits. The Game and Fish Board have done a good job in the past when they weigh all the information available. At a recent Game Board meeting, several members of the board indicated they were going to continue with this same policy, irregardless of how the subsistence issue turned out. The April 8th issue of the Tundra Times, a native newspaper, carried an editorial on subsistence. I quote, "The day of everyone having his own way with Alaska's wildlife population has ended, and all parties will have to accept some sort of compromise. But if that compromise means another inroad into the traditional way of life, it cannot be accepted." End of quote. What is traditional? The method and means, or just merely killing the animals in the most efficient way? Actually, neither subsistence nor local residence has been defined in legislation. How can the law be enforced? The legislature is trying to create a special class of citizens out of the subsistence user. The editor of the Tundra Time calls for a compromise, but not at the expense of the traditional user. Who is he? Sidney Huntington realizes that there is discrimination and that the traditional hunter is presently using modern methods and means. Is it fair to outlaw aircraft in certain areas that let local subsistence users charter aircraft for hunting? Can the resource survive uncontrolled traditional hunting using snow machines or modern weapons? Interior Wildlife Association supports the repeal of HB 343 and stop pitting Alaskans against Alaskans. Let the Department of Fish and Game, the Board of Fish and the Board of Game, and the advisory board systems we have set up manage the resource for all the people of the state on a maximum yield basis as they did for years without subsistence laws. That concludes my written testimony.
Thank you very much, Mr. Burley. Sigrid Kara, to be followed by Kenneth Denshi.
My name is Sigrid Kara, and I just have a few words to say. I'm a housewife and mother of two teenage boys, and I know what my grocery bills are. Yesterday, I came across some data by the Extension Service, which made it clear that in the Barrow area, a family of four would spend something up to $700 a month for grocery bills. As we all know, of course, the possibility for burning in the bush is much less than which we have in urban areas. So I don't know how people who would not go hunting and fishing in the rural areas could ever survive. In this sense, I feel the subsistence law definitely should be kept up, and food stamps, etc. I just wonder what solution this is. We always hear about sort of the bad things of the welfare state. Here we are in a situation where we can definitely prevent it, so I'm certainly against the repeal of the subsistence law. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Kerr. Kenneth Dunshi? Timothy Snyder, to follow.
Kenneth Dunshi, Chairman and Board. First of all, I probably, and the testimony here, if it's like any of the rest that we've had in the past, is going to fall on dumb ears anyway. Seems like our legislators forget everything that we try to teach them. They go to Juneau and end up mute to what the people want. There is no subsistence. When it comes to a hungry stomach, there is no law that is going to determine what people are going to do. They're going to feed their families the best they can, whether it's urban or whether it's rural. Going back to the Depression, it was not Alaska, but another part of the United States. No law passed by government or regulated by government told people what they were going to eat. Again, to emphasize, it has no color, no religious background. Wolf has. They have hunted him with everything that they have to hunt with. The government has done their poison programs. He has survived. The native, whether he is white or he is brown or black, will survive the government's laws. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Dunshi. Timothy Snyder, to be followed by Al Stevens.
Yes, my name is Timothy Snyder. to my recollection, I thought that preferential treatment and subsistence was all remedied during the Alaska Native Lands Claim Settlement Act, when the land grants were given to the natives, 40 million acres, and the $1 billion cash. I thought we were all equal at that point. It appears we aren't. Are subsistence users productive entities of our society, or are the urban dwellers the productive members of our society? The urban dwellers are the ones that have, for all practical purposes, implemented industrialization of our state, thusly producing huge revenues with which to support our state programs and our elected bureaucrats, while the non-producing members, the bush dwellers, of our society, our state, have chose their lifestyle. There are those that have testified today that they reside in the urban society, and there are those that reside in the bush society. So the choice is theirs. Is the productive sector that supports via financial aid to the non-productive, if they need the meat, then I think we should leave well enough alone and let the age-old unwritten law prevail. As the previous individual testified, when the necessity arises, the individuals will arise to meet the occasion. Their needs shall be met, whether it's regulated or unregulated. I think that we should repeal HB 343 and just leave well enough alone. We've had enough meddling from the federal bureaucrats, and I don't think we need the state bureaucrats involved in a delicate situation like this. We should leave well enough alone. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much.
I got a question.
Go ahead.
Mr. Snyder, could you define what you mean by non-productive again, please?
Yes. Well, previous to our vast non-renewable resources discovery, we had a taxation in this state, and the taxation, the base of the taxation, was primarily from the producing sector of our society, industry, the free enterprise system, what have you, from the urban areas. They have supported these state programs for years. Now that the free enterprise system, Seven Sisters, big oil, big mining, what have you, have come into play, they primarily live in the urban areas and have produced the revenues necessary to support the entire state.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Al Stevens to be followed by Hugh Dugan.
Thank you for allowing me to talk. Seems like each side wants its way and neither side is all wrong. Excuse me, my name is Alfred Stevens. I'm from Stevens Village. I represent my village corporation, Dingy. And once again, thanks for letting me talk. It's too bad that not enough rural people have a chance to come in. They can't afford it. They don't have the time. But luckily, you can hear us. I'm really sorry that some of the panel here couldn't be here or didn't show up for one reason. They must have had a good reason. But it seems like the more education both sides have on this subject, maybe the better choice we'd make. Majority rule isn't always right. The feds make rules that Alaska doesn't want to live by, and Juneau makes rules that villages don't want to live by. And it seems like subsistence is a good way of managing what we have. Everybody wants something of a limited resource, and it just can't go to everybody who wants it. There's a lot of well, I wouldn't say there's a lot. There's wrong on both sides, but there's also right on. I myself am in favor of subsistence, but I don't want to deprive anybody else of their way of life, or I wouldn't want anybody else to go hungry. Different places you go, you have different opportunities. If a person goes to a village, you wouldn't have the same opportunity as a native. But that's how it is over there, and that's how it is over here. We don't have the same opportunities here. It comes down to, seems like, a moral question, what's right for me and what's right for somebody else. I don't want to be in a position where I take anything away from anybody. The land belongs to all of us. It doesn't belong to Indian, Native, subsistence, anything. The law doesn't discriminate on race. It says when there's a sufficient amount, everybody can make use of it. When it's limited, subsistence users use it. And in the villages that I've been into, there's different types of people, different races, different professions that use subsistence, and it's not limited to just one class of people. I want to cut off now. I would like to say that I am in favor of subsistence, and also I would like to see more of the people get more educated on this issue, because it seems like we might have a better chance of making a good decision. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Stevens. Hugh Dugan, to be followed by Pete Boyce.
Good morning. Thank you for coming to Fairbanks. My name is Hugh Dugan. I was born in Douglas, Alaska, 51 years ago. I'm Alaskan, I'm an American, I'm an Irish descent. When we talk of the resources of Alaska, we're talking of the rights and subsistence, we're talking of the rights of the people of Alaska. That's all people. Whether we are from Barrow, whether we're from Kuskokwim, whether we're from Douglas, Alaska, or if we're from Fairbanks, or we're from Anchorage, it doesn't make any difference where we are. We're all subsistence users. I grew up on subsistence. My lifestyle as a subsistence user has changed, but I still have that right to go out and get that resource, whether it's moose, fish, birds, or anything else. Now, I see a split within the people of Alaska, and that's all people of Alaska, rural blessed to urban. Now, their lifestyle out there in the rural areas is changing. It's going to change more. I question the regional aspects that they have in the Fish and Game Board. And I am for subsistence, but I question the regional telling me as Alaskan what I can do in a certain region as far as fish and game is concerned. Don't do away with the subsistence. Please don't make it regional. But do include all Alaskans in it to protect our right. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Dugan. Well, we finally finished the first page, and we have approximately another one. So I would really encourage everyone to keep your comments as short as possible. I'm having trouble reading the rest of the names. I think it's Jay Whedon.
Jim Whedon?
Jim Widener. We'll speak after Pete Boyce.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, I'm Pete Buist. I thank you for coming to Fairbanks. I appreciate being able to share my views with you this morning. I'm what you might call a professional conservationist. I have a bachelor's degree in environmental resource management, and I've worked for many conservation agencies and groups. I also have lived in the bush and trapped for a living, so I believe I have firsthand knowledge of this subject. I'm a firm believer in the preservation of the subsistence lifestyle. For these reasons and others, I urge you to pass HB 343 and repeal the present subsistence law. In its present form, the subsistence law will ultimately be the downfall of the subsistence lifestyle. Incidentally, if this is the time for true confessions, I'm also a registered guide. My associate and I take anywhere from 2 to 5 hunters each fall, and any meat that we don't utilize ourselves, we fly to McGrath at our expense and give the people there. Obviously, the problem is one of deciding just who, if anyone, should be entitled to priority use of wildlife resources in short supply. In my experience, there are few people who meet the logical definition of a subsistence user. For the most part, these are be entitled to priority use of wildlife resources in short supply. In my experience, there are few people who meet the logical definition of a subsistence user. For the most part, these are old people. But the present law recognizes only your residence address. If, because I live in Fairbanks now, I shouldn't shoot a moose on the Yukon Flats until everybody in Beaver or Stevens has theirs, I offer this comparison. Maybe when somebody from Beaver comes to town, they shouldn't be allowed to shop at the grocery stores here until everybody in Fairbanks has all the food they want. Obviously, this is ridiculous. And so is the subsistence law. Obviously, that's ridiculous, but it's the same logical conclusion that we're supporting with the present subsistence law. Our families, yours and mine, came to Alaska at different times. Mine came in a pickup truck, and yours came the hard way over the Bering Land Bridge. Both our families have utilized wild game, fish, and berries as a major part of our diet. Today, neither of us and few others are forced to live this way. It is a choice. Just once, I'd like to hear a Bush resident admit that the reason that subsistence is so important is that, just like me, he enjoys hunting, fishing, and trapping. Let's be fair. It's not critical for the vast majority of those who, under present law, have a priority. This is not 200 or 1,000 years ago. This is 1981. It's a time of rifles, not spears, and snow goes, not dog teams. It's also a time when all hunters of game must get together, or there will be no hunting for anyone. The subsistence issue has worked as a wonderful wedge, cleverly driven by those who would have no animals killed. It's a widespread movement. Just last month, Alaska Magazine carried a short letter from someone opposed to all trapping. The return address was Bethel, Alaska. Urban hunters must put up with restrictions like on transportation to make chances to take game more equal. Rural residents must recognize that many of us in urban areas have utilized wild game and fish for centuries, as they have, and that it's a big part of our lives and our culture, too. We will be your most important allies when your Alaska Legal Services people, your VISTA volunteers, your Sierra Clubbers, your social workers, and your friends of the earth show their true colors and tell you to stop hunting and trapping. Careful manipulation of seasons, bag limits, and methods and means by the boards makes so much more sense than the present system and judicial game and fish management. I urge you to repeal the subsistence law before the backlash from it and the animal preservation movement eliminates the subsistence lifestyle that is so important to so many of us. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Pierce. Can we have a copy of your testimony, please, for the committee? That's fine. Representative Bettesworth wanted a copy of that.
Yeah, hi, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jim Widener, resident of Fairbanks. I want to thank the committee for coming to Fairbanks to listen to the very diverse testimony that's come here. I want to state my interest in this. I'm neither a hunter nor a subsistence user, but I'm an urban dweller. And upon occasion, I had an opportunity to live out in the villages many years ago as a VISTA volunteer. What I got to say today is kind of point out a common theme in all the testimony you've heard this morning. People are down here complaining, and your problem today is caused by increased population. Years ago, there was enough moose to go around. And as the population increases, there are going to be fewer and fewer and fewer and fewer moose. It doesn't make any difference whether you slice the pie let the urban dwellers go out here at Bethel and shoot the moose, or whether the population of Bethel increases till there's no moose there anyway. That's your problem. Your problem is increased population. Second problem you got is that there are political and economic forces at large in this state which guarantee the termination of subsistence. Whether the people like it or not, subsistence is dead and dying because of the political and the economic forces. There's many people in this room who support programs that increase population. How many people in here, for example, support large-scale agricultural developments? Maybe a little check in your mind, say, well, that's a pretty good idea. Many people in here support petrochemical development in Fairbanks. Well, that's a good idea, maybe. Many people in here support state subdivisions. Many in here support the Sitna Dam. All these projects have two things in common. Either directly or indirectly, they're going to wipe out a lot of wildlife habitat. Obviously, Delta Junction wiped out 50,000 acres of land that used to belong to the moose. So fewer moose, more agriculture. Petro development, what's that got to do with moose? Not a lot, just brings a few more hunters into Fairbanks. So now you have more people out here trying to shoot the same moose, and more people are doing without. Susitna Dam, what's that got to do? Well, tough, we just wipe out a little wildlife habitat down there on Susitna. So what, you know, let those people suffer it out. Problem is that the power is so cheap and so economical that you increase the population of Alaska, and these people all want to go out and they want to do what has been done traditionally, which is to hunt and fish and to trap. I might suggest, well, one other one. State land disposal. The cause celeb. Everybody's screaming for land. Well, that land that's being subdivided is somebody's hunting and fishing grounds. You had testimony from a gentleman on Chena Hot Springs Road who counted the moose in his front yard. Those moose ain't going to be there anymore because they're subdividing the land around it and they're subdividing the wildlife habitat that supports it. Now, you can get rid of the moose either by running them over with your car. And an interesting statistic in the Fairbanks area is that more moose are taken by an automobile than by a rifle. And this was in the News Miner a couple of months ago. A lot of them are being killed by cars. So fewer moose people want to go hunt them up in a 2-acre Bethel or where have you. We have a lot of these ideas floating around in our community. We want this, but by golly, we don't want to pay for it. We want all the big bucks of the oil company, but we don't want our lifestyles destroyed. We want this program, we want that program, and programs, 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 and programs. So what I'm getting at, each one has a price tag to it. And we're paying the price for the oil that's coming out of this state. This conflict over subsistence and who shoots the moose is the price tag, and it's the flip side. We're going to pay more and more and higher and higher and higher prices. So I'd like to close with a comment in here and suggest that we see the problems in a larger perspective. The problem's not just who shoots the moose. The overall problem's whether or not there's going to be any of them left. And as the population grows in Alaska, there's no way you're going to have moose. So the basic choice that comes down for all citizens to make, are we going to have people or are we going to have moose? Because there is absolutely no way you're going to have both of them. So there was a guy that wrote a book that had a saying in there. He says, ask not for whom the bell tolls, for the bell tolls for thee. So I think we need to start listening to the bell and realize that these problems are all tied together. Not subsistence, it's not just development, it's not just decline of the culture. These things go together. And until we realize that these problems are intertwined, like the handle on the price tag here, we really are not going to solve any of them. Whether you repeal the current subsistence law, replace it with another one, whether you drop it in the can and forget the whole thing, is not solving the problem. The problem is there ain't going to be any moose to go around. There's more people, there's
more hunters, there's more moose, there's more development, there's more roads. And you cannot have people and moose and hunting and fishing and trapping in the manner to which we have been accustomed to in the preceding years and have an urban society like Chicago or New York. And one other comment. There's a reason there's no buffalo in Canada.
Chairman, board, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Carlos Frank. I'm the chief from Minto. The reason I wanted to come up here and talk was to say something about trying to keep these subsistence land laws going. If the people in Minto could afford snow machines, I'm sure that every one of them down there would have one. Fishing in the summer for food and for dog food. A lot of people in the villages use dogs to haul wood and for trapping. I'm sure if they had money to afford snow machines to buy gas, I'm sure they'd use that. That's the easier way. Less work. Giving native people food stamps, welfare, and BIA assistances, I know is hurting our people a lot. It's making them lazy. Sure, a lot of them don't want that. They don't want to see food put on their table. They'd rather go out and get it themselves. Only 10 people in the village of Minto out of 275 population are working, got steady jobs. Most of these people are just living off welfare or hunting and trapping. There was testimony earlier that in the urban people are the ones that are building the industries and the progress for the people living in the bush. But they did all these without asking the people in the rural communities to participate in the industries or the progress. That concerned the people in the communities. Dealing with state lands. I know there are a lot of land that being disposed around Minto, around Manly, that the people in Minto were never aware of. These things is what hurting our people. I'd like to see that these subsistence laws be kept. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Frank. C.J. Paul, to be followed by Charlie Titus, Sr.
My name is Serene Paul. I'm testifying on behalf of myself and my family, but I think a lot of the people here in the room share my same views, and that is when this law was put on the books to begin with, I believe that it was unconstitutional and should never have become a law. And I think that a lot of people in here also believe that those of us that are opposed to subsistence are also opposed to individuals who have lived lives of subsistence out in the bush areas and have used meat and fish and water not for their livelihood, are trying to stop them from continuing to do this same thing. And this, I believe, is not the case. I, for one, hunt and fish, and I enjoy the outdoors. And one thing that I do dislike, and that is to have the tag or title of sports trophy hunter applied to me, because the fact that I enjoy the outdoors and the hunting and fishing should not put a tag of that type on me, and I think it's unjust and uncalled for. And that's about all I had to say.
Thank you very much, Mr. Paul. Charlie Titus Sr. To be followed by John Miller.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Charlie Titus Sr. I'm from Minto, Alaska. I subsisted hunting and fishing for 50 years. I'm 57 years old. I raised 10 children on subsistence. Never went very far in the school. So I had to do most of my living on subsistence, hunting and fishing. I fish every summer, I trap every winter, I hunt every fall. There is no dangers of running out of game, because my forefathers did it and I'm still doing it. My grandfather, my grandmother taught me how to do it, and I'm still doing it today. We never go out and shoot any more than we need. Just like I said, I trap every year. I never try to clean out my trap line. And when you got meat and fish and cash put away, dried, that's just like money in the bank. You don't worry. But if you close the subsistence, how do people is going to live? The way I thought of it, I never took no kind of a training. And if they close it, I wonder how they're going to make my living. Me and my wife get food stamps, $90 a month. With that, the cost of the meat or coffee, the price, you can't live on today. I remember way back in the early days when I first went to work for $3 a day. I made living on that, besides subsistence. With meat and fish, what I could get. Thank you very much testimony this morning. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Titus. John Miller to be followed by Mike Tinker.
Gentlemen, my name is John Miller. The subsistence law seems to be largely based on the premise that if living off the land is part of your cultural heritage, and if you choose to live this way, it is somehow morally right that you get first crack at wildlife resources at the expense of others. This seems to me to be clearly contrary to Alaska's constitution. My main source of heartburn, however, is the premise that if you are not a native and or live in a city and or choose to provide for most of your family's needs through participation in the cash economy, that hunting, fishing, and trapping cannot be part of your cultural heritage, or if they are, your cultural heritage is somehow less important because you fall into one or more of these groups. Well, these activities are a very important part of my cultural heritage. I do not belong to one of your sacred groups, and I very strongly resent being made a second-class citizen because of it. How can you possibly reconcile this law, which reserves a clearly public resource for a select few primarily on the basis of race, with the myriad of exactly opposite laws which purport to provide for equality of opportunity in employment, housing, education, virtually every other aspect of modern society? But Alaska's law does not define a subsistence user on the basis of race, you might argue. True enough, The wording in the law even allows the interpretation that you are a subsistence user if you utilize what you harvest for personal or family consumption. But the practical effect of regulations promulgated under the law and court decisions to date is that most of the people who receive the favored treatment are Native, and most who are discriminated against are not. That, gentlemen, is racial discrimination that makes a mockery of the principle of equality under the law, regardless of the innocence of intent, which I doubt. Another source of severe heartburn is the premise that it is somehow morally right that the professional indigents we tolerate in our society should have first crack at the public's wildlife resources. Wildlife resources are entirely too valuable to waste on the welfare system. But what really galls me is the monetary income criteria that has recently been used to define who's in and who's out. It is entirely possible that a family with a $30,000 annual cash income in Fairbanks is more needy than a similar family with the recently sanctified $12,000 income in Gakona, when you consider the latter likely receives food stamps, welfare, free medical care, free education for their children all the way through college, free or heavily subsidized housing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I could go on and on, but my heartburn is getting intense. I will close by saying that, in my opinion, the subsistence preference law is immoral, illogical, and certain to be a continuing administrative nightmare that will be impossible to implement fairly. Somehow, subsistence proponents have engineered packing this hearing, and the testimony of you heard today does not represent the way most Alaskans feel. And you know it as well as I. If you do not repeal it, the subsistence law, we, the voters of this state, will stuff it up your nose through the referendum process.
I hope you choke on your heartburn.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Miller. Mike Tinker, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and those of you of the committee who have come here. I think perhaps one of the things we've all learned here this morning, and I hope that you will take back to your colleagues, is that this issue is worthy of consideration in this legislature and is probably more important to the people, especially in rural and interior Alaska, than some of the newspapers and publicity would have us believe. My name is Mike Tinker, and I live in Esther, Alaska. I'm here today to urge you to repeal the existing law on subsistence preference. And please note that it is the law and the preference that I oppose, and not the concept of subsistence. The existing law is discriminatory, or is being treated that way, and worse yet, I think it's unnecessary, as many others have testified today, and I won't go into, but I think it's limiting to the concepts of fish and game management, and I'll cite an example. The law, as it's written, gets us a communication factor, and it's written down in words. The words get us a legal interpretation, and it is through those interpretations that the policy of subsistence written into the law becomes discriminatory. And this seriously hampers the ability of the fish and game resource managers to do their job. Let me cite an example. The Unit 13 Elchina Caribou Herd, which has been under intense fish and game management to restructure it for many years now, at least 7 or 8, under a permit hunting system. Because of a legal interpretation of a subsistence-oriented case, the ability of managing the number and the way those permits will go causes a discrimination. It says that some residents are more deserving of permits than others. Gentlemen, that's discrimination. You can't cut it any other way. Call it subsistence, call it anything you want. What's happened here is in the interpretation, we have got to a prejudicial situation, which if was left alone in the first place, and the fish and game managers from Glen Allen would tell you that likely they would have done away with the permit system entirely. And what that would have done, in effect, without the law, was it would have let every subsistence user in that area go get a caribou instead of just those who now must draw under a 250 minimum permit. You have created a situation that has the exact opposite result of what you desire. And that's what I mean by the law is discriminatory, and we can't argue. There's no argument.
When I was in third grade, some days we didn't have the opportunity. It was not school. Every day we had to go out and lick off the land, move here and there, just to get our everyday's meal. Every spring I used to have seniority. And from what I gather this morning, it sounds like it's getting for a union deal. I'm getting to where the job. I used to have the seniority.
since the highway department joined the union. I'm way down on the list. I couldn't find a job no more. So I went back out, trying to make my living off the land and back home where I'm presently living. And now I, from what I gather, are trying to shut down subsistence. I think it's bad enough the way the game regulation is set. You're allowed 5 days to get a moose, and I guess anybody in this room knows that you couldn't get a moose in 5 days unless you had them tied up. And same with fishing, 3 days out of a week. I don't know who's putting up all these regulations, but I'm glad I got the opportunity to sit in front of the board to put out my opinion, how I feel about it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Charlie. Thomas Scarborough, to be followed by Steve Matthews.
Good morning. I'm Thomas Scarborough. I reside at 6.5 mile Cheney Ridge here in Fairbanks. A little bit about who I am. I'm a member of the Political Action Committee for Alaskans for Equal Hunting and Fishing Rights. I'm one of the three prime sponsors of the initiative that has been talked very little about today. The initiative does two things. It will repeal the existing subsistence laws, and it will also assure equal availability of fish and game to all personal consumptive users. In that light, it goes a second step beyond the House Bill 343 that we're discussing here today. The initiative has been approved by the Lieutenant Governor, and petition books are in the mail. I expected to get mine yesterday. Maybe it'll be here Monday. The legislature has two courses of action it can take. It can pass House Bill 343 and possibly eliminate the need for the initiative, although the second step initiative has to resolve legally. Or the legislature can stand by and wait for the voters to decide the issue. I can assure you it'll pass, and I can find very few people that'll disagree with that simple statement. If the initiative is left on the ballot, it's going to do a few other things, and I will predict that it'll be a major factor in selecting our next governor and a good number of our legislators. Now I'd like to get at what the real issue we are discussing, and very little of the testimony we've heard today actually deals with the true issue at hand. The issue here is economic or political control of the people in the bush, and there are very few people out there that realize that. The true issue is the discrimination that will result by applying subsistence laws, and this will ultimately lead to political control. Whether one can hunt or fish is not the issue here. That's not the issue at all. Deletion of subsistence laws will improve everyone's chance to have fish and game to eat. And what it will do is give our fish and game managers the ability to get back to managing on a biological basis and away from the current management on a cultural basis. The survival of our fish stocks and our game herds depends totally on biological management. Any other type of management will result in destruction of the wildlife resource, and all you have to do is look at other countries in the world that have done this before us, and the evidence is very plain. This very event is occurring around many of our villages, and if any of you in the room that have traveled to the villages, this is very evident. Common syndrome in many of the villages is walk, crawl, or fly, kill it, no matter whether you need it or not. This has been perpetuated by particularly our federal game management for many years on waterfowl. It's very prevalent on the island. Having regulations, Unit 13, to show where we're headed. Only those people who do not work for a living, for whatever reason, will be allowed to hunt and fish. This means that the ambitious people in the bush, in the villages, who get a job to provide for his or her family will then be denied the right to for subsistence, be denied the right to hunt and fish. And that's exactly where we're headed. This will result in tremendous conflict. We haven't seen anything yet. It'll also result in the most inefficient people doing the hunting and fishing. The kindest action that can be taken for the bush residents will be the passage of either HB 343 or the passage of the subsistence initiative, and history will record that. This will allow equal use of the wildlife resource by all economic levels and allow the continued management of our wildlife resources on a biological basis. Thank you, gentlemen. I'll have this testimony typed in.
Thank you, Mr. Scarborough. Can I ask you a couple of questions? Since by your statement, you said that you were the one of the founders and leaders of the initiative that presumably you are passing around now. Do you foresee that the federal government would close down its lands to all hunting except subsistence hunting on federal lands if the initiative went through?
There's an awful lot of misinformation out on what the D2 lands bill does. Our initiative only affects state lands. We will not change one bit what happens on federal lands. That's already in federal law. We are destined to federal management of federal law, and unfortunately the natives may have to deal with that as well because of that Lands Act, because of the first paragraph in 801. No, the feds are not going to manage our resources on state lands unless we ask them to.
What percent of the state's lands, of the total land mass, is there?
Well, we got 103 million acres of state lands. What's that, 30%, 25%, something like that?
So with the initiative, you're proposing that perhaps two-thirds of the state's land mass would be closed to all hunting except subsistence.
That will be up to how we deal with the federal managers. That they do not intend to close it. They only deal with subsistence. And only if it becomes necessary that priority be required. And the courts will dictate how that, what that say is because of the Lands Act. Anyone is allowed to go to through civil action to determine whether their subsistence needs are met or not. Consequently, it'll be determined in court. But the feds won't say we're going to close all the hunting unless there's a need for it.
Well, it's clear to me that the federal government would take action if the state did not comply in setting up a subsistence hunting scheme. And the special assistant to the governor was clear with the message that, in fact, the Secretary of the Interior, while he may be of the frame of mind that states have rights in relation to the federal government, he is also tied by his oath to the office to uphold the federal laws, and as Secretary of Interior, he would feel compelled to initiate action in the state of Alaska in regards to subsistence hunting.
I don't think there's any question that he's compelled to uphold the law. How he does that is open to an awful lot of latitude. And I think that once if the native peoples are really serious about wanting to have equality in hunting and fishing, the first thing they'll be doing is asking for the federal Congress to repeal that assistance law. It is going to cause conflict beyond comprehension if it is applied as we see the trend going today.
It would seem to me, though, that most of the land that is involved surrounds the rural areas in the state, and that's basically where most of the fish and game are. And it seems to me that you're risking an awful lot by taking a chance that the Secretary of Interior will not close those lands down.
The Secretary of Interior has two choices. He can close all of the lands he wants if he feels that non-consumptive use is the highest priority. That should be clearly understood. He can close any park he wishes. He can close any BLM lands. He can close them all for non-consumptive use if he feels that's a priority. Now, I don't expect that to happen. But he's got all kinds of choices for consumptive purposes. And you're wrong, Tony, about the highest concentrations of wildlife being away from the urban areas. The highest concentration of moose we have is right across the river in Unit 20A, and it's directly the result of we urbanites' management programs over there, what we have dictated happen. We also have a good population in Unit 13, which you can say is fairly close to urban areas, and it's because of management. The same thing can happen in the rural areas, but your federal land management haven't allowed the same kind of management we've had on many of our state lands.
Does it affect you one way or the other that the Joint Boards of Fisheries and Game voted not to repeal the subsistence laws?
I do not understand that. I think somebody is very misinformed as to their actions. I know many of those people personally, and it's beyond my comprehension of why they voted the way they did, but I suspect there's political reasons behind it.
Are there other questions of Mr. Scarborough? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Steve Matthews?
I think she's trying to make her president known. Anyway, I'd like to say about the subsistence law, it's very necessary for the people of rural Alaska, because this is how they grew up. This is their main lifestyle, is through the animals that they go out and shoot and kill, and whales and rabbits and muskrats and ptarmigan and stuff like that. If you were to take that away from them, you'd have, just in the Fairbanks area, only just in the Fairbanks area, there's over 6,000 Indian people in the rural areas, not just here in the interior. And if you were to put all those people on welfare, where's that money going to come from? Just like the guy stated not long ago, he said, come from our pockets. Sure it would. But I'd support it, but I'd bitch about it too. Because there is a way to deal with that problem before it gets to the food stamp problem. What I'm saying is there's no way that this board or the governor should try to do away with the subsistence laws. We need them, and our folks out there in the villages need them all bad. And we can't see no other way of dealing or going without these laws. I appreciate you people if you would make in your recommendation that even these laws, unwritten laws right now in the spring, go to migratory birds. There isn't one piece of a moose that's killed by an Indian or Eskimo or anybody that's wasted. All the whole thing is used. The skin is used for to sell commercial stuff. Even the marrow is used. So there is no way that one little piece of moose is wasted. I would like you people to recommend to the governor that subsistence law is necessary to the survival of the Native Alaskan. Not only Native Alaskan. There is a lot of white people that live in the villages that live by these laws. And they do not waste. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Matthews. Thomas Dunk and Dave Lacey will follow. Mr. Dunk here? Are you Mr. Dunk?
No, I'm Mr. Lacey.
Okay, Mr. Lacey, why don't you go ahead? Ray Marley will follow.
I'd like to testify against the repeal of the subsistence laws.
I think subsistence is what Alaska is all about, and I think if you repeal the subsistence laws, that you will further the centralization that is going on, and not only in Alaska but all around the world. I'd like to deal it with on the topic of centralization versus decentralization. When people are involved in subsistence, they're using local resources. But everywhere else we see in the world, and particularly in this country, the big is getting bigger. Big oil is buying out the copper companies with their massive profits made from resources in rural Alaska. And the rural people in Alaska share those resources also. And some people have said, well, people out in rural Alaska aren't productive or whatever, but I can't see that the people in the urban areas are necessarily so productive when just taking the oil out of the land and rural Alaska is where most of the money is. It's supporting the tax base for the boom that's going on in Alaska. Anyways, as everything gets bigger and more centralized, everyone has to get their food from more of a monolithic, centralized food system. This is dangerous to rely upon. We should be trying to promote decentralization here in Alaska as a way to counter this. Decentralization means people are responsible for getting some of their food on their own. This promotes discipline and better citizenship. Whereby this big socialistic system that is being foisted upon us, this big centralized system, it can be disrupted and people get lazy and depend upon this. And this big system is being foisted upon us where everything is being sacrificed for one god, this big god of economic development. And the Susitna Dam and the petrochemical and the big agriculture, all these things are working to destroy individual effort here in Alaska. And these things are nothing more than big government subsidies to urban Alaska, basically. Really, we should, urban and hunters and outdoor people should be together on this, because one of the big causes is the population and the pollution and the habitat loss that are destroying our subsistence resources and will continue to destroy individual effort in Alaska. I feel that we should cut back on game guiding and that activity first, if there's any question as to where the resources should be going. As it stands, subsistence is being threatened by development now.
I agree with some of the intent of the state statute presently on the book. I do not like the word subsistence because I question the appropriate usefulness of those of us in the Alaska bush, whatever that happens to be, when we say we have to have subsistence. I can't go along with that. Priority use, I have no problem. I have no quarrel with a system to permit priority use of our resources for those that has a proven need to use it. In its present form, the state statute, in my opinion, is totally wrong, and would argue with anyone that would care to do so on its discriminatory practices. Beginning all the way back to the Civil Rights Act of 1964 up until its present form, I have had lots of experience and training in that related, and I cannot agree that any portion of the Alaska subsistence law is not discriminatory. The law is new, and we are just now beginning to see the effects of it. That law, in conjunction with the most recent Alaska Department of Fish and Game regulations that as published in the Fairbanks News Finder for caribou hunting in Unit 13, and I like to think that I have a good occupation along with a good business. And as a result of that, I take home monthly, yearly, whatever you want to call it, a fair amount of dollars. I would also be willing to sit down and show any of you to where the rules as shown in the Fairbanks News Finder, I can prove to you, as a family in that area can take home more dollars than me and yet have priority over me because they qualify as a subsistence user, and for that I object very much. As I said earlier, I have no quarrel with priority for those that can prove a need, that they need that resource. Now, we've heard repeatedly that the current law speaks of scarcity. In my 21 years in Alaska, there has never been a time that our natural resources, and I'm speaking specifically of fishing and hunting, is not scarce. If they weren't scarce, I believe our state statutes would have an unlimited, unclosed season. And to my knowledge, there hasn't been a species, at least for my use, has not had a limit and a season in 21 years. So I throw that definition out. It's meaningless when you say scarcity. It's scarce 21 years ago, it's scarce today, and it's going to be even more scarce 21 years from now. In summary, I would like to say to this group, I do not believe the basic issue is subsistence or priority or whatever you prefer to call it. In my opinion, the basic issue is the anti-hunters, the anti-fishermen, the anti-trapper, and the anti-whatever. The people that were responsible for leading the Alaska Native Land Claim Settlement Act of 10 years ago divided this state, divided us into the Alaska Native, Alaska Eskimos, whatever, and the all others. We come along a few years later, and we had D2. That further divided us. Now the state has seen fit last year to further divide us, so today we have two classes of citizens of Alaska that we're talking about specifically today. We have the urbanites, and we have the non-urbanites. Well, what are we going to subdivide us on tomorrow? And the books tell us that, you know, as long as an entity works together, it's hard to defeat that. But when you start subdividing them and getting into splinter group, they become weakened, and you can do whatever you want to with them. And that is a proven fact. That's not my opinion. That's proven. So I say that the subsistence law, as presently a state statute, has to be changed. And it has to be changed such a way that it will pull the Alaska citizens together as a team. I'm not going to say repeal it, but I am going to say, recommend to you very much, do not leave it in its present form. It has to be modified somehow or other to get all Alaskans to work as a team. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Marley. The Reverend Scott Fisher, to be followed by Noel Nunley.